welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 19. Really happy to have two guests from Aster Data here today. First is Mayank Bawa, the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Aster Data. Hi,
Hello.
Mayank.
Hello, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks very much. And we also have Sharmila Mulligan, the EVP of Marketing at Aster Data. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hi, Gary.
So let's jump right into the industry news. One of the things that came out this past week was Amazon is now offering a packaged relational database as part of EC2. They chose MySQL. And I don't know if this is directly related to what you guys do. We'll obviously get into more detail on that later. But what's your take on, is this a significant move for Amazon to now offer the prepackaged MySQL? I mean, you could do that on EC2 before. I guess the customers just had to do most of the work.
That's right. But I think it's a very significant development. You know, by offering it as a service, Amazon has suddenly raised the API on how to write applications on Amazon into a much more industry standard API. So I believe customers can easily deploy more applications on the Amazon cloud.
I think any time that Amazon does one of these further integrations, they did this not too long ago with Hadoop, making that available sort of prepackaged for people. That's got to be good news for cloud computing as a whole and everyone. Now, they also did a price cut. No, but I looked at there were some big headlines on the price cut, but I think the maximum price cut was a 15% price cut on the Linux instances. Did you see anything about the price cut?
I saw something, but I...
Yeah, I'm not sure it was tremendously significant, but it was sort of interesting. You read into it, like, why are they doing it? Obviously, they felt like they had to do it, or they wouldn't have done it, but I don't know if there's been any reaction, maybe in part due to some... pricing activities for Microsoft coming out. We'll see exactly how they're going to play that game. Another little news snippet from Gartner, of course, the headline, Brace Yourself for Cloud Computing 2010. And I think the headline here for me was that virtualization has gone from the number one to maybe the number two or three slot behind cloud computing. And there's always this debate about, is virtualization part of cloud computing, separate for cloud computing? Do you guys have any thoughts on that? I have some strong opinions, but is virtualization a prerequisite for cloud computing, Mayank, in your opinion?
I think it is. For anybody who's offering cloud computing as an infrastructure, I think virtualization is the way to share a lot of customers on the same limited hardware.
So from a multi-tenancy perspective, you have to have it.
Absolutely. Otherwise, the costs are too high. And I think what Amazon is doing by cutting costs is... it's making it really hard for new entrants into the cloud space to come in and match at their operational efficiency.
Right.
So it will be very hard for Google, HP, IBM, and Microsoft to follow up.
Yeah. So you can see that we'll put a link in the show notes, some of the top trends that Gartner had predicted for 2009 and 2010. And again, that switch out of cloud computing, which to me is a much more broader topic than virtualization alone. If we say virtualization might even be a subset. Hard to know how they make sense of all that ranking. One other announcement that came out is Ubuntu 9 with cloud integration. So I believe that they're making the Eucalyptus Cloud Computing Suite really part of that, and as well making a lot of APIs bundled into the operating system there. Do either of you use Ubuntu? We talked a little bit about it on the last show. I'm an aspiring fan. I don't really use it frequently, but I'm getting more and more used to it. With 8, they got... A lot more functionality in there. And I think with 9, with this cloud integration, it's going to be really interesting. I'm waiting for the day when literally a non-technical user can just click in to set up an account with Amazon S3 or spawn a couple of instances to do a particular application on Rackspace, whatever. When it gets to that level, sort of, then I think... But these are the steps in the right direction.
That's right.
As far as I'm concerned. Great. Well, let's jump into the guest Q&A. Again, we're really happy to have Mayank and Sharmila from Aster Data Systems here. And let's start, Mayank, with you. Just give us a little background on yourself and a little bit of the early days of getting Aster started.
Sure. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Aster Data Systems. And I co-founded this company back in 2005. With a couple of my colleagues from the Stanford University PhD program, Tasso and George. And those are the actual roots of Aster. You know, George, Tasso, and I, we were working in three different research groups, but coincidentally sitting on the same floor in the computer science department. And that's what got us talking over beer and other delicacies.
Right. And Sharmila, you joined the company this year, correct?
That's right. I joined this summer. I was previously running marketing for Opsware, and spent the prior year at HP, but most of what I've done over the last 10, 15 years has really helped shape new software categories.
Mm-hmm.
And what brought me to Astra is an opportunity to do that here again, because I think what we're doing is pretty fundamental and is going to really help transform a lot of what's happening in the data management space as it relates to big data management and analytics on big data.
Sure, sure. There's been a lot of activity about that. Certainly the web seems to be driving the forefront of all of that. Now, Mike, 2005 was a long time ago. We talk about big data. A lot of people use that term now. It's getting more recognized. But 2005 was not, we weren't quite there yet, I would say, from the, at least even the industry insider perspective. Tell us back sort of in the time machine 2005, what was going through your mind when you say, I can see this problem happening and here's some of the things we need to do from Astra to tackle it?
Sure, and part of that was driven by a research agenda as well, which we had started doing in 2000. We could see a whole bunch of data emerging and being used even in traditional enterprises. And the realization was there that the traditional databases are unable to store and process all this data. And that was the reason which was driving Google to innovate on Google File System and a whole bunch of new infrastructure, and then Yahoo to follow in the early 2000s. So we could read the writing on the wall that this is going to be an increasing problem, not only for the leaders in the internet space, but across the entire industry.
Right. And so tell us a little bit about sort of the specifics. You know, this is a big problem. Data warehousing is a big market. There's a lot of players, everything from the classic Teradata, you know, all the way up through newer offerings such as yourselves. How did you look at that market and identify the white space where a new solution was needed?
Oh, absolutely. So the way I think about the data warehousing market is this is a growing problem, and that's why a lot of people are trying to solve the problem. But my understanding is everybody thinks this is a performance problem. Everybody thinks that, oh, if only I could do the same operations faster, I could crunch a lot more data sooner. Mm-hmm. But I think what people are missing, especially in the data warehousing market as well, is that applications are using data in very different manner.
Right.
And those applications need to access data in a different paradigm, and they want to crunch the data in a much more advanced computational framework.
Mm-hmm.
So we are the only player in this data warehousing market that understands that this trend is happening. And so we have built a very mature product offering that allows you not only to manage very large volumes of data and run SQL queries, but also embed applications close to the data so that applications can manipulate data in manner in which SQL finds it impossible to do.
So this concept of running applications closer to the data is generally well understood. People are getting accustomed to this idea. But can you give us a specific example of an application that customer would run close to the data where a traditional SQL query might not get the job done?
Sure, absolutely. So in telecom, you know, there is an explosion of new pricing plans like the FAV5. Plans. You know, you can have the favorite five people.
Oh, yeah. I suffer from that with my mobile phone carrier, about picking the plan every couple of years.
But think about how that plan emerged, right? So somebody had to do the analysis to say if, let's say, a fraction of the customer switched to this plan and had their five most frequent calls become free, how much would the business suffer?
Right. How much would be gained by people buying the plan versus lose from the free minutes?
And how many new customers could we acquire because the customer is calling people outside the network?
Okay.
And so they will now join the plan just to participate in this plan.
Okay, so that's the problem that has to be solved.
Yes, and it turns out it's very, very hard to do with SQL. It's very, very hard to do with SQL because it's all about tracing call graphs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to trace my top five people, arrange them in a graph, and then do extrapolations on that graph.
And that's not an operation that SQL was necessarily designed for. So
no.
Right.
And so people had to do sampling and make models, assumptions about how the general U.S. population.
And now you've got a risk factor of whether you're on the mark or not with that sample.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that translates to lots of millions
right.
of dollars.
So what's the application that would then be used to solve that issue?
So you could then easily, if you had an application that could construct this graph on, you know, 200 million subscribers, for example, manipulate that, create the graph, find the top five for each node.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are talking about tremendous amounts of data, and we are talking about application logic. that is not possible in SQL to do.
Okay.
So if you could write that application and give it to this infrastructure that I'm talking about that runs applications close to the data, that application can run super fast.
Okay.
Because it has data very and is making local accesses to data.
Okay. So is that what you would call a MapReduce operation when you talk about MapReduce and SQL as combining those two functions?
Absolutely. So SQL MapReduce is a building block for that. But there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to be built around SQL MapReduce to enable these applications to sit inside the database. Like we need a whole set of workload management primitives, application services and data services to make sure that applications can seamlessly coexist with data.
Right.
And that's what we have produced to surround the SQL MapReduce function that we talk about.
What are some of the other use cases that...
Yeah, I think another great example, Gary, is if you look at the whole area of fraud analytics, and that applies to banks that are basically trying to analyze credit card fraud, it applies to online gaming companies such as those that have, you know, poker online, where they have millions and millions of users playing all these hands. We have a customer, for instance, that was doing fraud analysis, and what they were doing is catching fraud after the fact. So they would go and traverse the whole data set, they would analyze what had happened over a week-long period, and then at the end of that week, they would try and identify where fraud was conducted.
So really it was an offline batch process that they were running.
Exactly. They're losing a lot of money this way because they weren't catching fraud in time, and basically all these hands were being played, and they were losing money in this scenario. So what they did is they're a great example of a kind of application that greatly benefits by pushing that logic down to co-locate it with the data itself. So they took their Java application, their fraud application, they pushed it inside the Astra data system. The application now runs alongside the data. By doing that, you are now able to actually catch fraud in almost real time, right? So instead of what it used to take, which was about 90 minutes for them to run their fraud analysis, and they ran it once per week after the fact, they're now actually running this application inside of the system. It runs every 15 minutes. The actual analysis on the data takes 90 seconds.
Wow.
And so they're getting these phenomenal response times, but importantly, what they're getting is the ability to actually catch fraud in flight while it is happening versus after the fact and being able to actually prevent those users from continuing to play online because they realize that they're doing something malicious.
Right.
So there are a lot of these cases where it's driven by the need to actually do the data analysis in near real time and do it on a very large data set. The case that Mayank talked about, for example, in the telco area, is about doing very fine segmentation of your user base and being able to identify patterns within that user base so you can be smart about how you actually personalize services for them.
Great. So You talk about the integrating applications. I noticed on your website there you have a lot of partnerships or folks that you work with to integrate different applications on top of the Astra platform. Tell us a little bit about some of the key partners there, some of the key applications. And it seems to me that you have to navigate this fairly large ecosystem of tools that each customer might be using and sort of pick and choose some of the popular ones that you integrate. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So they're really about four classes of solutions that we integrate with and that we do today. So the first is BI tools. And so in a lot of cases, customers actually want to use a BI tool against our product. The data is actually stored in us. They're doing analytics with us. They're doing reporting with some of the BI tools like MicroStrategy and others. The reason for the integration is that they want to be able to use those BI tools against larger data sets and get very good response times. And so we support integrations to a whole host of BI tools. In addition to that, we also support integrations to packaged analytic applications. In the case of packaged analytic apps, you know, there's applications like SAS, for example. In that case, what you want to do is be able to have an application like SAS analyze a much larger data set and for that application to be able to do more sophisticated analytics. How do you do that? By pushing that functionality down into the Astra data system, specifically our 4.0 release. So you'll see more of those kind of integrations come from us, but basically the whole goal there is to take those analytic applications that are off-the-shelf analytic apps and actually bring that inside of the system to enable very fast analysis on a much larger data set. third area are ETL tools. So we work with various different ETL providers, you know, Informatica being one that allows basically you to quickly load data. Fourth area, and this is something new, is we also a couple weeks ago announced integration with Hadoop. And the purpose of that is for you to be able to do two-way data transfer between Hadoop and Astrodata,
mm-hmm.
where you could be doing your analytics in Astro, so you could be pulling data from Hadoop into Astro, or you may have some reasons to move data from Astrodata into Hadoop. So
mm-hmm.
it's two-way. We just announced the Hadoop data connector a couple weeks back.
Great.
So those are sort of the major categories of vendors we work with. Some of these integrations are done through a very tight partnership with them, and some of them are done through the APIs that they expose
right.
that we are.
Now, if I'm a customer, I don't necessarily need to have all these other tools. There's still a lot I can get just from the Astro data system itself, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We
Absolutely.
Have some customers on... In the enterprise accounts, you typically already see a pre-existing BI tool
sure.
in the account, or you see a pre-existing ETL solution in the account, and they want you to be part of that ecosystem. In a lot of other cases where companies are trying to break new ground on the type of analytics they're doing, they're not necessarily integrating with any of these. Because we are in ourselves a data store plus an analytics engine in one.
Right. So if somebody's starting from scratch or maybe without so much legacy infrastructure,
yep.
they can maybe take advantage of the capabilities if they're willing to put what I suspect is probably hopefully not too much effort to make use of the analytic capabilities.
To make use of the analytic capabilities simply entails having your own custom analytics application that you've written or some other package app that you
okay.
purchase, right?
So that just
and that's
plugs
all it is.
In,
I mean,
yeah.
someone
it's,
has to write the analytics
sure.
logic, right?
It's as simple as writing your Java application program.
Yep.
Okay.
And it works.
Great. So you also have a cloud edition of
yep.
your product. Give us some detail. Was that from the get-go, or is that something that you launched after the initial release? I don't recall.
So we launched it earlier this year,
okay.
And we are hugely excited about our cloud edition. To us, cloud is a vehicle. You
mm-hmm.
know, we ship the software
right.
as a software for enterprises who want to use it outside the cloud. But we have taken the special effort of making sure that software, every software that we release, also works transparently on the cloud.
Okay, and so could run on Amazon Cloud or Rackspace Cloud? Or
absolutely. In fact, we have customers running on Amazon Web Services and another cloud.
AppNexus is the other cloud that we support.
Great.
And in fact, we run the largest data warehouse on the Amazon Cloud.
Fantastic. You can't say what that is.
Sure.
Or are you saying of all the customers combined?
Of all the customers who run data warehousing on
gotcha.
Amazon,
okay.
we are the largest one.
Excellent. Now, do you break out any of the detail of sort of how that traction compared to the on-site license traction? Can you just give us an idea of trends there?
So we don't break out the revenues, but we are seeing, of course seeing a rapid adoption in the enterprise space,
mm-hmm.
but a lot more customers are talking to us about leveraging the cloud offerings. I think cloud is definitely getting a momentum going into next year.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy for people, and it's such an easy way to get started. Now, from a pricing perspective, is there a different licensing model for the cloud edition versus the on-site licensing edition?
So right now we have kept it simple. It's the same.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how many servers you use, how flexibility you increase or decrease your resources. We only charge on the size of data. But we are thinking about adapting as the cloud becomes the norm.
Right.
The adoption of our cloud edition is obviously more prevalent with some of the Web 2.0 and internet companies we work with. In the enterprise, what we find is that new services from Amazon, such as Virtual Private Cloud, for example, is going to be very interesting because it allows an enterprise account to have transfer data between their data center into Amazon and back. So
mm-hmm.
it gives them the ability to host at both places.
Right.
So we think that, you know, that's going to open up a whole new opportunity and a lot of potential for enterprise accounts to use
right.
both.
So this is a slightly tangential question, but you guys obviously are involved when there's lots of data around. There's this point that always goes back and forth of how easy is it to get huge amounts of data in and out of the cloud, and do you need to put it on disk drives, or do you need to use some kind of network acceleration protocol specifically for transfers? Have you guys encountered this as a bottleneck for folks, or throttling back what people might do? Is the bandwidth issue a real concern, or are there enough ways to get around it?
I think it's a real concern. I think if you want to move a lot of data from one cloud to another or from your private enterprise to the public cloud, we have to overcome this. And hopefully a technologist will come up with an answer.
Yeah,
to
I think now, I mean, Amazon offers the sort of what I'll call the Netflix model of ship a drive back and forth.
That's
yeah,
right.
In research we call it Sneakernet.
Sneakernet, right. And that might still be around. Then there's companies who are trying to do multipath protocols to facilitate this.
That's right.
And, you know, but again, there's only so much you can do with the speed of light. It seems like the data is growing faster than the technology to
yes,
supplement.
And it's also, you know, it's going over a wide area network, and so there's a lot of congestion as well. To set up and transfer long
right.
over
some. And what would you recommend to somebody if they said, hey, we got you know a petabyte, but we want to move to a cloud? So, I mean, you have to do that in a manual migration, I believe.
Well, I think Amazon services is very interesting. The other thing that we are finding is if you can start collecting the data in the cloud itself,
right.
it becomes incredibly easy to use that data
right.
within the cloud.
Right.
So we are seeing a lot of adoption there also. Of people running data collection directly up there.
Sure. I think once you, if you're building a new web application, you have that clean slate, you're in, it's easier position to be in.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
right. That's
yeah.
right.
So give us some insight into the roadmap. We're, you know, at the end of 2009 here, but 2010 is just around the corner. And what can people expect from Aster Data?
So a lot of innovation is coming in our pipeline. It's tremendous. We've announced a data application server that we talked about,
mm-hmm.
where data and applications can coexist in the same infrastructure. I think that's a fundamental shift in how people think about leveraging data,
mm-hmm.
and it will open up a whole new set of prospects.
You mean the idea of data is just the data, and I'm going to deal with the compute and the processing separately to really making those much more tightly coupled?
Absolutely. There is this entire three-tier architecture that has been, imprinted in our minds.
Right. It's conventional wisdom now.
Yes. The database is the bottom tier, the application server is the middle tier, and the presentation is the top tier. But what this three-tiered architecture really implies is it sets up a data pipeline where data has to be pumped from the database to the application
mm-hmm.
server. And this data movement really kills performance.
Data movement always kills everybody. The less you can move it, the better, right?
That's right?
Absolutely. So that's the fundamental shift of taking unaltered applications and letting it run close to the data on the same infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that we're very proud of bringing to the market. In future, in a follow-up release, we'll be expanding the kinds of functionality, the kinds of applications that can be leveraged out of the box on this product roadmap.
Right.
And that product roadmap is very, very exciting.
Great, great. Well, I know functionality is always the thing that rules, but it is fun sometimes to talk a little bit about infrastructure, and so that's some of my background. Give us just a minute or so on what the typical infrastructure looks like from server, networking, hardware components, on what's somebody might run, typical configuration.
Sure. We have written our software to work on commodity hardware. So this means we can take tens or hundreds of commodity servers, Lintel boxes,
mm-hmm.
With local attached disks running Linux operating systems. Connect them up using gigabit Ethernet, and when 10 gigi becomes available, we'll use 10 gigi.
Sure.
To store all the data and do all the crunching that we need to do. The software itself has to be pretty smart in leveraging these hundreds of servers. So, for example, in this product version that is coming out, we have built a very elegant workload manager
mm-hmm.
that allows us to manage not only the queries, but also the applications that are running on this infrastructure so that all computations play well with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Compression is an important feature when we are handling large amounts of data.
Sure.
And compression has to be very elegant and performant.
Right.
Those are some of the things that we have taken special care of building in the infrastructure.
Great. If there's one thing that you think people don't really understand or know about Aster that they should, what do you think that thing is?
What don't they understand about Aster?
What's the biggest misperception?
I think the biggest misperception is that this is another data warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely not what the company set out to do. What we set out to do is really solve the new problem of how you do very large-scale analytics on big data sets.
Mm-hmm.
And so often on the surface, people look at this and say, is this another MPP data warehouse? And what it really is a very unique platform that lets you do data management and application processing inside of the same system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a couple years now, the sort of data warehouse notion has continued to trickle out there in terms of the perception of the company. And now I think with what we've done in Foro, it's become much clearer. And sort of the vision that we set out to execute on is really now fully coming to market, which is about bringing application logic close to the data. And
right.
what you're going to see from us is, you know, much more innovation around that area. Our whole focus is to make it possible for you to actually do a new generation of applications that you couldn't do before.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, from my perspective, I would like to comment on the data warehousing market in general.
Sure.
You know, you mentioned there are lots of players.
Right.
And I think the biggest misperception about the data warehousing market is everybody thinks this is a price performance problem that we are solving. You know, let's throw more hardware at it, and what's the cheapest hardware we could throw at solving the big data problem?
Right.
I really believe that this is a misperception. People should think about their entire stack. You know, what is the data going to be put to use for, and optimize that stack.
Right.
And that stack will not be fixed by putting the largest, biggest SAN in place.
I could not agree with you anymore. You can't make huge jumps forward in computing or anything for that matter, unless at some point you're willing to let a little bit of the past go, maybe not all of it,
that's right.
and move to something new. And in this case, it sounds like, you know, you're really encouraging people to reconsider the entire package of application to data,
mm-hmm.
and how they're doing their analytics. And is it time to sort of open that box a little bit, you know, make a couple of adjustments, and then get a leapfold improvement in what they were doing previously. Is that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but.
Absolutely, you hit it right. You know, anytime problem changes by 10x, solutions have to change.
Right, right. Just sticking with the same old stuff isn't going to make it.
But,
yeah, well, that's good words to part on. We'll hopefully everybody can take that to heart as they consider these kind of solutions and others. Want to jump into the final section of the show. We call it Cloud Tips, where we pick an interesting consumer facing or business facing cloud application or tool other than your own. We've talked about Aster Data. I know you have a cloud edition, so we can put a link to that in the show notes. I'll go first. I haven't used this one yet, so I'm going to put my disclaimer out there, but I've been very intrigued by Ubuntu. We talked a little bit about it on the last show. Somebody had a tip for the Ubuntu on a USB key, which can actually take over a Windows machine with a full Ubuntu environment. I talked a little bit about using Ubuntu on the side. This Ubuntu 9 with the cloud integration, I think, is a big step for the industry as a whole. I'm sure it'll take a little while, but I'm putting my vote in for Ubuntu 9 and plan to get to that next week. So hopefully we'll have more to report further on. Mayank, how about you?
Interesting. So I find cloud-based services like Share This very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Share This is a collaboration service,
mm-hmm.
which allows people to share the articles that they like
right.
with each other. And this is very interesting in the sense that Share This has built their entire offering, and it's an enterprise class offering. It has tremendous availability
right.
on the Amazon Web Service Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a tremendous thing to do. But I think if you take that idea a couple of steps forward, now that all the content is in the cloud, it can be shared among a lot more consumers.
Right.
And I think the cloud offers fascinating options for sharing.
Yeah, there were a couple of stories today about, will Google survive in the social web? And are the recommendation engines and the social networks and the sort of sharing that's based on individuals espousing wisdom, is that going to be take over from a search engine, you know, helping people figure out what they should see? It's an interesting philosophical discussion there.
Very interesting, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Mike. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
Sharmila, we really appreciate it. Is there any place you'd like to point people to, company website, blog, anything else?
Yeah, AsterData.com, and definitely, you know, has everything that you want to know about our new Foro announcement.
We also have my blog online called Winning with Data.
Okay.
That's always a good resource.
And that's accessible from the Aster website,
that's
too.
Correct. That's correct.
Great.
That's
well, right. We'll put a direct link to the blog as well. Well, thanks again. Thanks to our listeners. You can visit us at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com or subscribe on iTunes by searching for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast search bar. We really appreciate you listening, and we'll see you again on the next show. Bye-bye.